All right. Good morning again, JD Alcoholic. And thanks, Jim. There's a lot of people on this meeting that have played really big parts in my life, my sobriety. I mean, literally, there's probably a dozen of them on here. And that's just not a gratuitous remark. It's sincere as I can be, is the contributions that people make are, and I probably don't even know it for the most part, are really a blessing. It's just a couple of things I want to riff before I kind of get into more of a, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. But, the set aside prayer that I guess I read, I go on Friday mornings to the set aside meeting every Friday. It's been going on forever. It's where I met a lot of people here. I don't know. I don't know what I'd do without it. Then when John read the prayer list, there was a name on. It's not only people here and whatnot and who are, are sober and but it's some people. There was a name on there in particular of a guy who helped me immensely. I mean, I'm forever grateful. And he went back out and died tragically, so I am I'm moved to be here, seriously. Had to be some mysterious power of beyond my understanding to have gotten me here, because last night at 7 o'clock I wasn't coming here. Like, so there's Jim and I on a Saturday night. We're not out whatevering. We're probably sitting on our couches thinking about how fortunate we are to have one another, to have a program, be sober, be able to get up clear-headed, be with you guys is beyond my wildest dreams. And I was a dreamer. Anyway, it's kind of just my free associative remarks. A little bit about me. I'm going to be 70 in May. I've been married and divorced twice. Once actively drinking, once in sobriety. I was divorced. Not right now. I'm in this amazing relationship. I know it wouldn't be amazing in every sense of the word unless I was sober. And yeah. So I was born fortunate. Really, white upper middle class male in the United States in the 50s. That's a pretty nice start, man. But then I was from a very stable home. Parents were married, and, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But I remember my brother at my father's eulogy said, in our house, it wasn't perfect, but you always knew that you were loved and safe. So that's how it all started for me. Amazing. I've always known this, but partly through some step work, I was always I always wanted shit. I was the kid who nagged my parents to get a swimming pool because someone down the block put a swimming pool. This is like before swimming. I'd never seen a swimming pool before, and I wanted a swimming pool. And we were never going to get a swimming pool ever. Wasn't going to happen. No way, no how, never. Same thing with bikes. I was the last of five, and bikes were just passed handed down, and I always wanted like an orange crate, some fancy bike. I did it. I nagged. I just I don't know. That's just a throwaway. I'm not going to harp on that, but I said I was the last of five, and I think about that by about 10 or so, and this is through step work, so I'm pretty certain this is how it went. I couldn't wait to drink. Because there was drinking going on ahead of me. My two brothers, just a couple, and then maybe 5 years older, my sisters, and even my parents, that although they weren't drinkers, alcoholically at all, But neighborhood parties. I couldn't wait. I could not wait. Really, I'm not making this up. I could not wait. And it finally all happened. I'm saying outside of a sip here and there, type of thing of beers that left on a table during a family party or something. But at 12, I can remember vividly being in the basement of a friend's house on Parkside Avenue in North Buffalo. And there, I think they're, I don't know if they're 8, there could have been 10 on a weekend night, parents out, and out came a bottle of apple wine, Boone's Farm apple wine. And I think we were in seventh grade. We were in seventh grade. And with that, about half the people left. They went, oh, I got trouble. Off they went. Then the other half, so there's maybe five of us in a circle, pass the bottle around, and one person who takes a sip, it's like, oh my gosh, it's horrible, And then it goes around, and I get mine. I'm like, well, that is literally nectar. And I remember it gets about two or three away from me. Now the person didn't like it, didn't take any, and the person starts kind of talking like with the bottle like this, and I lean forward and I go, dude, take a sip and pass it on. Literally, I'm like a minute and a half from the first drink I ever had in my life, and I'm telling some guy to like shut the you know what up. And of course, Reno and I, most people just had a couple sips. We finished the bottle. I was drunk. And I went home. I got sick. My parents were, they knew what was going on. I lied. I said had been smoking, which was a lesser sin than drinking at 12 or seventh grade. And that's the start of it. Illicitly, really doing it excessively, getting sick, lying. That's how it all started. And I chased, I, you know, not, not, you know, look, I was 12 and I was going to school. My parents, it was a pretty, well-run to strict household. I wasn't drinking every day or week, but I'll tell you, the chase was on right away. I loved it. Oh, gosh. And then, 2 years later, some of these are fun now, but when I think about it, 2 years later, now I think we're like freshmen in high school. We would rob a liquor store on Parkside Avenue. Rob a liquor store. We weren't armed, but we were robbing a liquor store. And we would run over into the park, out to the middle of Delaware Park, where there were cannons at the time, and we would drink. A lot the same thing happened. Some people would just go, oh God, we're doing this again. They'd leave, Other people wouldn't drink. And there were just, now it was up to about three or four of us who got it. We got drunk. That was the intention. Anyway, so it's kind of, so it kind of just kind of picked up, right? It just, that I'm a freshman in high school, By my senior year, it's making a difference in life. I loved basketball. I played a lot of basketball. I excelled at basketball. I went to a school that kind of featured basketball, and I, started my freshman year starting. I was MVP of the freshman year team. And by the time I was a senior, I was more interested in, sex, drugs, rock and roll. I really was, and it just started to affect my life a little bit. In many ways, subtle still, kind of who I hung out with, what activities I engaged with, how well I, anyway, yeah. Then to get into college, man, it was, so yeah, college, man, the freedom that came with college, I went away. And I didn't handle it so well by anyone's measure, man. I just, it was wild. Wild. My name JD went from like juvenile delinquent as to Jack Daniels to Joe Drugs, like dude, I was just like I was just chasing bigger, faster, more, like whether it came in powder form or liquid or, smoke this shit. And, if you had asked me, and I was having like the time of my life, really, just. But once again, it was affecting who I hung out with, what I did, how well I achieved. I just was insane, and I didn't have a clue. Remember, I thought I was the coolest guy on the planet. No shit, man. Just to the side, I just got this thing downloading, installing software. I hope it's not going to disconnect that to me. If someone does, pick up my story, will you? Because a bunch of you guys have heard it. I apologize. Anyway, so there I am. Now I'm I graduated college and I moved to New York City, and I get married. I got a job that has a really good future to us. But dude, I just drank, and beginning Thursday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I was a drinker. I was a known drinker too, but there are a lot of people who like to hang out with a guy like me, and how many times I literally crawled to work on a Friday morning. But I remember this is the environment was I the first time I crawled to work. My address was 40 Wall Street. I worked on Wall Street, and my job, my boss Joe called me Johnny. Johnny boy, he says, "You don't look good." And I'm like, "Keep it down." He was a drinker. He got hammered at lunch every day. It's about 10 in the morning, and he says, "Come on, we'll go over to Harry's at Hanover, which is a drinking hole on Wall Street, Hanover Street." And he orders me a corned beef hash, poached egg, and a Bloody Mary. That's my boss. At like 5:10, around like 10:30, 10:45 a.m. on a Friday morning, teaching me how to like basically handle it, Oh gosh. But it affected who I, it was almost like that somewhere in the book it talks about a fog, It was just kind of rolling in on me, really. It was very subtle. I didn't know it. I don't think any, I don't, no one ever called me an alcoholic. No one like came to me, I guess maybe my parents were like, "Dude, stop it." But it wasn't like my wife were having huge arguments over my drinking and stuff. She's a drinker too, so yeah. But I now know it all started to fall apart, unravel, once, and then it didn't end in some traumatic arrest or anything like that. It just like it rolled in on me, rolled up on me. It kind of started to break down on me. When I say my life just kind of started to just, a guy like me who just born fortunate, given a break at every turn, in a on a path that led to, just material success, was it was just falling apart. I got divorced, and but I know I'll move out of New York City. I'll go home. Actually, I was on my way to, this is how wild and crazy it was. I was going to move to Seattle. I had a friend out there, but I'm coming through. Next thing you know, I forget Seattle. I'm in Buffalo and I'm remarried. Oh my God, the woman had four kids. I go from like whatever to an entirely different life. I now own two houses, two cars, four stepchildren, a dog, why? Oh my gosh. And, kind of the, but it was still falling apart, still drinking alcoholically, and I'm getting very close to what happened, and I've been arrested before back in, a while. I've been caught stealing, and that turned out fine because, you're white upper middle class male, first time, dude. They barely slap your wrist and let you go. Yeah, but now I'm married, and literally on the eve of our anniversary, I get it. Oh my God. Matt, it is starting to reload here. I have no way, no. Am I still there?
Yes, you are.
Okay, great.
You
Thanks.
are.
Yeah, thanks. My screen kind of disappeared because it's doing something. If I disappear, I don't know what to do. So anyway, I get arrested, drunk and driving, crossing the border at between Buffalo and Canada, and like, just to give you a sense of, like, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. Didn't barely thought I was drunk. Like, who gets drunk and drives through like a checkpoint? And I heard it on tape because I was they pulled me over and they asked me if I had been drinking. I was like, hell yeah, it's Friday night. Literally, hell yeah, I'm in custody. Oh God. So anyway, and then my wife said, "Dude, I think you got a drinking problem." And I went to a therapist. I met with a therapist for not long. And one day, this is like a call out to people who are in like kind of the, informing professionals of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're sitting, and she had this really nice kind of living room type of office. I'm sitting on a couch, coffee table. She's in this nice chair, and she slides a pamphlet across this coffee table to me. I pick it up, and it's like the checklist for alcoholics from Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a pamphlet. I had never given much, if any, thought of me being an alcoholic. I'll stick with it. I had never given it a thought. And I literally went like, "What's this?" She says, "I think you're an alcoholic." I'm what? And because I trusted the woman. She had nothing, no axe to grind. And just to let you know about, no, I don't know. 3 days later, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I met Jim and probably other people on this call. It's where I met my sponsor. I'll let you know that that meeting's a wake-up call. 24 years later, my sobriety date, that whole little sequence of getting arrested again and the counselor and go to AA happened in January of 2002. And I went to my like first meeting, I guess, was wake-up call. It's my home group. I still go every Tuesday and Thursday. It's online at 7:15. If sometime you can't, you got something really scheduled early and you want to get on a meeting 15 minutes early on Tuesday and Thursday, we're there. I'm like, I'm still going 24 years later to the same meeting I went to. It's like, anyway, so what happened was, I mean, I don't think anyone heard anything that they like, wanted to cover their ears or said a quick prayer for me or that the for my victims. It was a pretty much normal descent into alcoholism, It really was. Slow and steady, baby. But I went to a meeting at 7:15 a.m. on a Tuesday morning in January in Buffalo, New York. It's pitch black, freezing cold. I went to a church I've never been to by myself. I couldn't find my way in. There were about 12 doors on the goddamn church. Then you get in the church, this thing's freaking enormous. It's like a cathedral. It took me, I don't know, I'll say 5 minutes to find the stairs to you know where, the basement. No one told me, it doesn't say in the meeting thing, because back then there's no internet for it. I know. I'm looking in some, like, I don't know where the hell I was looking. And I get down into a room. I don't know a soul in there. And I've been going for 24 years, 2 days a week, almost without fail. Like, just that is a miracle. A minor miracle, but it's my miracle. I haven't had a drink since 34 years of alcohol being a common thread through every aspect of my life. Good, bad, indifferent, up, down, different friends, different schools, different jobs, different cities. Alcohol just was a common thread of my life for 34 years. And I drank to get drunk. Never once did I say, let's have a drink and get convivial, guys. Just didn't happen. I drank to get drunk for 34 years, and one day in January of 2002, I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and it's been 24 years since I have not had a drop. It's amazing. That's a miracle. Like I said, minor, but it's mine, you know? And what happened? I really have no clue. I was there. It was me. It's hindsight, 2020. And I don't even know what happened because when I went, I had no intention of stopping drinking. I have no interest in stopping drinking. I'm not even sure I wanted to slow down. I wanted to get out of trouble. Remember, I was having marital trouble, legal trouble, financial trouble, health trouble. Every trouble you could imagine was either like front and center or waiting in line for me. And I wanted to get out of that trouble. And all those troubles had come either one at a time through my life up till then. I'm 46 at this point. And maybe a couple other times in my past, there had been kind of this confluence of them. They'd all, but I would kind of wiggle out of them. You know, I'd get on and I'd get right back with life. Okay, I'm good. That was some bad luck or whatever. It's her fault, whatever it was. You know, I'm good now. And here I am in 02 in a basement, an AA meeting for the first time. And there's a bunch of guys. It's just like this. This is what it is. Like, how much has changed, you know? Even some of the faces, you know, it's crazy shit. I do know now, I'm gonna talk a little bit about what it's like, but I do know what happened. I swear to God, there was a power in that room that morning. That saved my, that changed my life forever. It was speaking through guys like Jim, you know, or not. Maybe he didn't even share that day. I don't remember. Maybe just his sheer presence on that cold, dark winter morning in a dank, really dank church basement. I've been in a lot of places. I've been top of mountains, valley floors, wide oceans, rare and exotic lands. Literally, I've been in the fanciest cathedrals on the planet. And where, like, I finally just sensed, I didn't even know, I sensed a power. A loving power was in that, was that wake up call. I remember, so this thing, this event, this experience of a lifetime of that's unimaginable, that's, you know, unbelievable. It's changed the course of my life. I didn't know it was happening. I thought I was just getting out of trouble. The therapist will say, good boy. The wife will say, oh, I kind of like you now. You know? Kids will say, hey, look, you know, you're not quite as grumpy. That's what I thought was happening. I thought the judge would say, oh, yeah, well, he hasn't had a drink. I thought all this stuff, right? liver enzymes that go down, all that stuff. That happened. Guys from AA, guys you know, went to the court up in Canada with me, and their presence saying this guy not only hasn't drank, but this guy goes to AA meetings is, I believe, the sole reason the judge looked favorably upon me. So AA helped me get out of trouble. And then the next thing you know, I don't know what day, a week, a month, or a couple few months later, I realized, for God's sake, I haven't had a drink. It's just kind of happening, you know? I thought, okay. Let's see where this goes. And I'll tell you where it went. At about a year, I can get myself there like right now. I'm standing in the shower one morning, getting ready to go to work. It's about 6 a.m. And all of a sudden, I just turn the shower off, and I'm aware that I'm having an argument with someone that I'm unlikely to see that day or in the near future. And I'm carrying on both sides of the argument that's never going to happen. And I'm like, excuse my French, I'm fucking crazy. Literally, I think I was audibly talking to myself. I can't verify that because there's no one in the house. No one else in the house was up. I'm like, I'm fucking insane. And I told my sponsor, he said, dude, it's time. And I'm like, what? Time for what? Don't fuck with me. And he said, it's time to do the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all good to be sober or not drinking. I was even helping people. I think I was chairing the wake up call now and stuff like that. I think I had been to like ECMC to do the lead and that type of stuff. I'd never really, I mean, remember, we read the steps, they're up on the wall, whatever. There's some talk about the steps. Just like I had not considered stopping drinking. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop drinking. I came here to get out of trouble. For a good half a year or more, I had no intention of ever working at 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. None, zero. Barely crossed my mind. And the combination of this realization that I'm nuts, and then this guy who was embodying universally admired principles of a God, patience, loving, kind, said, I'll go through them with you. And I did a half-assed job. I remember coming with my four step, and there's like eight things on it, right? I'm like 47 now. You know, I've been living an alcoholic life for whatever, 35 of them. I got eight things on my list. And he goes, he's so sweet. He's sweet to this day. He's still my sponsor. He was in that meeting 24 years ago. He went, is that all? And I went, you know, with a little testiness, I went, yeah, why? He went, no, that's good. It's good. Very gentle, like, you know, not like go do five more or do that list again or I had 1,000. Just, no, it's good. Because he saw that I was ready for a, you know, you know, I wanted to fight about it, you know, like my list, you know. And he just gentled me into going on to five, you know, or six, whatever. And here's what it's like, you know. Probably a couple of years later, I heard about this meeting, probably from my sponsor again. If he's passively aggressive, you'd never know it, but you'd start doing shit you'd never thought you'd do, like the steps and stuff. And then you realize when you think about, well, how did I come to be here? And then I'm like, oh, Chuck, that bastard, you know? And he did it in this gentle way. But anyway, I find myself at a place called Step Action. And the outline for Step Action is, I think, like literally 67 pages. This, like, the outline is like thicker than the book it's outlining. And Dave P., my sponsor's sponsor, who's like hosting it or whatever says, hey, if you do this outline start to finish, it was over like 48 weeks, okay? It's three quarters of a year. You will have read every single word of the big book. You will have done the steps so thoroughly that if anyone ever asks you if you've done the 12 steps, you can say, excuse my French again, fuck yeah, I've done them. Don't fucking challenge me on it either, baby. If you've done step action, if you've ever even looked, if you've even held this, the anyway, and I did it two or three times, and I'm not bragging, dude. Like working the steps. I've worked the steps, get like dozen guys have come to my apartment right where I am now, and each person would lead a different week, a different step, and then we did a different outlines. And I've gone to step retreats, and like the steps. It's the steps. It's the steps. Oh, so I'm a guy who works the steps. That's just who I am. That doesn't make me any bigger or better. It doesn't make my sobriety any more precious. It's just what I do. I don't do them all the time, but I do them. Yeah. So I'm going to start to wrap up. It's in the steps, but it's also in the meetings, dude. Just to let you know. When I first got sober, I was maybe going one or two meetings a week type of thing, thinking, holy shit, this is I'm pretty proud of myself, but I'm also going, this is a little much. I gotta get up every Saturday or whatever. I go 6 days a week now. Matter of fact, this is my seventh in a row right here. No, matter of fact, this is like 2 weeks in a row. So like I go to more meetings now with 24 years of sobriety than when I was like a mess. Who does that? I'll tell you what else I do. I'm going with some guys on Wednesday night over to Stutzman, where you can find me one Wednesday night a month, talking to some people that, drugs and alcohol has just kicked the shit out of them. Try to bring a ray of hope in that hopeless place. I've gone there with guys on this meeting, so it's just me. It doesn't make me a good guy. It gets me today. It gets me here today. That's about as good as it gets to be here with you guys. Seriously. It's amazing. Before I end with a quick reading, just the steps, the power of them in general, and then I did the steps about 2 years ago. We did them in my sponsor and I, just the two of us. We met every day on his porch, set up this little folding table and folding chairs. And we did it 4 sessions in a month time. And my first wife had died a few months earlier, and I'd never made a direct amend to her. And I remember when we got to, 8, 9. Anyway, I one day, about a week after we did the steps, it was clear to me that so I went to her grave. I had not gone to the funeral and stuff, but I went over. It was a gorgeous Saturday in August, gorgeous day, morning, and I found her grave. It didn't even have a stone yet. It was still dug up a little bit, and I made amends to her. I carried that around for 34 years. And I felt her presence. And it was so, we were both so aware of that. We were young then, young. We weren't bad people. We were just young and drinking and running around New York City, acting insane, And both of us forgave each other right there. I've heard of people like writing letters and burning them or sending them to, out into the ether and, going to their parents' grave. And I used to poo-poo that shit. And then there it was happening to me. Finally settled 35 years later or something. Unbelievable. So I'm going to close with I'm a 12 and 12 guy. Some people are big book thumpers. I'm a 12 and 12 thumper because wake up call on Thursdays, we read from the 12 and 12. So it's the first words of AA literature I ever heard. It's step 12. It's the longest paragraph in the world. Only Bill Wilson could write a paragraph that goes on for like 2.5, 3 pages. But it says step one showed us an amazing paradox. We found we were totally unable to be rid of the alcoholic obsession until we first admitted we were powerless over it. In step two, we saw that since we could not restore ourselves to sanity, some higher power must necessarily do so if we were to survive. Consequently, in three, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. For the time being, we who are atheists or agnostic discovered that our group or A as a whole would suffice as a higher power. Beginning with step four, we commenced to search out the things in ourselves that brought us to physical, moral, and spiritual bankruptcy. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Looking at step five, we decided that an inventory taken alone wouldn't be enough. We knew we would have to quit the deadly business of living alone with our conflicts and, in honesty, confide these to God and another human being. At six, many of us balked for the practical reason that we did not wish to have all our defects of character removed because we still loved some of them too much. Yet we knew we had to make a settlement with the fundamental principles of six. So we decided that while we still had some flaws of character that we could not yet relinquish, we ought to nevertheless quit our stubborn, rebellious hanging on to them. We said to ourselves, "This I cannot do today, perhaps, but I can stop crying out, no, never." Then in seven, we humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings as he could or would under the conditions of the day we asked. In step eight, we continued our house cleaning, for we saw they were not only in conflict with ourselves, but also with people and situations in the world in which we lived. We had to begin to make our peace, and so we listened to the people we had harmed and became willing to set things right. We followed this in step nine by making direct amends to those concerned, except when it would injure them and other people. By this time at step 10, we realized we had begun to get a basis for daily living, and we keenly realized that we'd need to continue taking personal inventory and that when we were in the wrong, we ought to admit it promptly. In step 11, we saw that if a higher power had restored us to sanity and enabled us to live with some peace of mind in a sorely troubled world, then such a higher power was worth knowing better by as direct contact as possible. The persistent use of prayer and meditation we found did open the channel, so where there had been a trickle, there was now a river which led to sure power and safe guidance from God as we were increasingly better able to understand Him. So, practicing these steps, we had a spiritual awakening about which finally there was no question. What about step 12? The wonderful energy it releases, the eager action by which it carries our message to the next suffering alcoholic, and which finally translates the 12 steps into action upon all our affairs is the payoff, the magnificent reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, who wouldn't come? Like, where would I rather be? At the gym? Seriously, or on my third cup of coffee? There is no place I would rather be than right here, right now. The magnificent reality. So humble, so simple. No bells, whistles, no rose petals. Just, my good friend Bernard says, usefully whole, JD. What a wonderful gift. Anyway, I love you guys. Thanks for having me, Jim, and all your guys' time. I really do appreciate it. Thanks.